What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome students from the Millicent Hollifield Academy of Health Sciences at Rickards High School. Holly Berger. Holly is a sophomore. She is in the program at Rickards. She's into pediatrics, geriatrics, and psychiatry.
Hey, glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Gabby Simmons. Gabby is a junior, and she wants to be a pediatrician.
Hello.
Leonard Lindsay, he is also a junior, interested in neurology, psychology, and first response.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
And with our Wrap with a Pro series, it provides high school students enrolled in the Millicent Hollifield Academy of Health Sciences the opportunity to talk directly with a health professional. This hour, 411 Teen features physical therapist Marcy Gray. Marcy is a graduate of FAMU. She works at the Center for Orthopedic Sports, Physical Therapy, and she is a certified McKinsey clinician. Marcy, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you for having me.
Physical therapy involves the remediation of disabilities and impairments of individuals of all ages, from newborns to the elderly who have medical problems or other health-related conditions, illnesses or injuries that limit their abilities to move or perform functional activities. Marcy, I'll start with you. What is your type of physical therapy? I know you said you are a certified McKinsey clinician.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, currently I work in an outpatient orthopedic clinic, and all of our therapists, we have 11 or 12 now, McKinsey-trained clinicians there, and we primarily treat musculoskeletal pain and conditions of the musculoskeletal system. What we do primarily is assess based on mechanics and load. In other words, how somebody's joint moves through certain ranges of motion with or without weight-bearing status. So if somebody came in with back pain or neck pain, we may have them move in certain directions, either while they're standing or laying down, so we can assess the system and what the responses are to the movement that we have them do. I have experience from other physical therapy jobs I've had in acute care hospital settings or rehab settings where I have worked with patients with brain injury and stroke and infants and other kinds of other conditions other than just musculoskeletal pain. And so when we get those patients referred to our clinic, those are also patients that I will see as well.
All right. You all have questions. I know you do. What did your training involve? I'll start. I'll get it started for you.
Okay. Well, when I went through physical therapy school at the time, which was ancient, I graduated in 1999. So at the time, most all the programs were bachelor's level. So I didn't realize that I wanted to be a physical therapist until I was already halfway through college at Florida State. And so at the time, my mother actually had a ski accident and tore her ACL, which is a ligament in the knee, and had to have surgery and go through physical therapy and kind of relearn how to walk and run and ski again. And the way she talked about her physical therapist was pretty cool. I thought, wow, what if that'd be cool if I could at least help one person that way. So I kind of looked into it. Of course, they were like, what? You're already halfway through college. You want to do what now? Because I wanted to be a doctor. And so I looked into the physical therapy schools around, and there was one at FAMU. And so I wound up graduating from Florida State and then proceeded to go to FAM and get a bachelor's there also in physical therapy. So at the time, like I said, it was just a bachelor's level, even though I had already had a bachelor's from Florida State when I got in there. But you didn't have to. You could. It's an entry level.
Okay.
You can have an associate's degree in basically whatever you wanted to have it in, as long as you had the prerequisites to get into the bachelor's level program. There were a few master's level programs at the time and no PhD level back then. As of now, I don't believe there are anything other than the entry level PhD programs. And so those therapists have to have a bachelor's degree when they go into the program now. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a science field. It can be in whatever field they want it to be in, as long as they have a bachelor's degree. But they do still have to have the prerequisites to get into. So most of them have some sort of exercise science degree or a pre-physical therapy degree already, which kind of gives them the path of going through that program anyway. It's kind of built into their bachelor's level. The programs now are 3 years long, whereas when I went through, they were two. But then postgraduate, I became a McKinsey-trained clinician, which is although I think now they allow people that are in school to go through parts A and B. I have to check if they get to go through any further parts than that. But anyway, there's four parts to the McKinsey program. Each of the classes is a four-day class, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday course. Once you complete all four courses, and you do that over a year or 2 years or however long it takes you to complete them, then you take what they call a certification exam. And it's practical and written. And then once you take that, if you want to further your McKinsey training, they have what they call a diploma program, which I do not have. We have diploma therapists at our office. And that is, I believe, a 9-week all-intensive training program. There's several months of book work, and then those people go off to what they call a diploma program and study under diploma-trained therapists to get that further training.
What's the difference with McKinsey program? I mean, is it the coursework? Is it the length?
Is it
the focus?
It's kind of the focus.
Okay.
It's how we're trained to deal with the musculoskeletal system. Mm-hmm. We think a little bit differently than just how I was trained when I got out of school. The office that I work in right now, we track outcomes, so it's really neat to see your success. We average about 4 to 6 visits per patient, depending on what they're there for. Now, if I get one of those stroke patients or somebody with a brain injury or a different, you know, one of those kind of other diagnosis versus the typical neck or back or shoulder pain musculoskeletal patient, then those are generally longer visits to do the rehab for. But our back and neck pain patients generally see 4 to 6 visits before resolution of their problem.
Okay.
What are most common cases you'll see as a physician?
Physical therapy.
Most of the patients that are referred to us, like I said, are musculoskeletal pain. So the major diagnoses that come across our you know, fax line or phone calls in are usually back pain, shoulder pain. Usually it's some kind of pain. A lot of those patients, too, have what we call radicular or referred pain as well. So it's not just in their neck, but it kind of radiates down their arm. Or it's not just in their back, but it radiates down the leg. Those kinds of cases are primarily what we see, I think, the most of.
Back to your training. When you think about your training, and I know you have to go way back to think, but when you think about that training, what were the major challenges that you may have encountered when you were in the physical therapy component of it?
Program? Mm-hmm. You mean at the school itself? Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I had young children, so finding the time to study and do everything I needed to do when I was going through the program.
How demanding was it? Yeah,
it's a very demanding program. I mean, it takes a lot of your time. There's lab work to do in that first year. You have a gross anatomy class, so you actually are dealing with, you know, hours and hours in a gross anatomy lab. So knowing what you're dealing with there, I mean, it takes a long time to study for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but, I mean, that's just one of your classes. You know, it's a full caseload plus clinical work. I think we started out having like one day a week or one half day a week in an office somewhere. We're kind of observing. And then as your program advanced, you were less and less time in the classroom and more time in a clinic under a clinician that you were supposed to follow around and then eventually take a caseload. So there were days I was actually like working a full day, but I was a student and didn't get paid for it. So, and one of my clinicals was in Albany, Georgia, and I drove there every day. So it was like 2 hours in the car going there, working all day, 2 hours in the car coming home, and I had kids at home. And it was, you know, so there was a balance of, and, you know, things I had to do at work and mm-hmm. things I had to do at home. And then I had to study the patients' cases that I was working mm-hmm. on and then report back to the clinician that I was under and, you know, then come home and be mom and cook dinner mm-hmm. and, you know, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, tuck them into bed. And, you know, my husband was very helpful. Mm. So that was wonderful, you know, and supportive. So it's a commitment. I mean, this is not a school like – it's not just, you know, you go to class and you're done. You have to really study and know what you're talking about to get – you know, the courses that you need to know that information. And it's not just knowing the coursework. It's, you know, once you've learned that, it's like, oh, I have to apply this in the real world because I'm going to have a human being sitting in front of me one day that's in pain and I've got to figure out why and how to fix it. So, you know, I had to learn this bone is connected to that bone and this muscle is connected to that and, you know, how everything's put together. It wasn't just like, why am I learning this, mm-hmm. you know, to learn it for the test, but I have to apply this later in a mm-hmm. clinical setting. So.
And you were saying you worked with infants, and I would think that's even – because they can't tell mm-hmm. you.
No, they can. And so that's actually quite a challenge. And it's not so much dealing with the infant as sometimes you have really worried parents.
Hold your thoughts, okay. And we'll come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with physical therapist Marcy Gray. I also have students from Rickards High School Health Academy. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This is our special Wrap with a Pro series. It provides students in various health fields an opportunity to talk directly with a health professional to investigate that particular field. Marcy Gray is our featured professional today. She is a physical therapist. Marcy, I had to interrupt you, and you were talking about working with infants.
Yes. There is a couple of physicians here in town that refer some of their infants to me. One of the cases I commonly see with them is a condition called torticollis, which is where it usually happens during birth. Mm-hmm. Slight muscle injury to the neck occurs, and they basically have their head tilted and sort of mm-hmm. turned a certain direction, and they hold it there. My own son, my youngest son, was actually born with that as well. And so I have personal experience dealing mm-hmm. with it. And then the babies that I get referred to me with that condition, I have to, you know, teach the parents how to work with their child mm-hmm. Because it's a condition that needs to be stretched constantly throughout the day. So a lot of times the babies don't necessarily like to be moved in a position where it hurts. So it's a lot of gentle work, and then the parents are a little on edge. And mm-hmm. so part of your job, too, is putting them at ease that this is going to be okay. And so they're getting them comfortable with me working with their child and getting them comfortable working with their own child in this way is part of that. So that's most of what I see as far as the infants are concerned. But there are other conditions that I do work with. Babies that were born breech that have stiff joints in their knees and ankles, some that need training on how to walk, lower tone, and so it's kind of going through some of the developmental stages with them and the parents and teaching them what to do and their caregivers what to do as the child is growing and what to expect milestone-wise.
Do you have any patients with scoliosis?
I get a lot of patients with scoliosis, and a common misconception of that is that it causes back pain. It can, and so a lot of times I have to take that scoliosis diagnosis and figure out if it's causing the back pain or if the back pain is there because they just sit and text on their phone all day or work on their laptop just like every other normal teenager that has, you know, or may or may not have a scoliotic condition, or is it truly that scoliosis that's causing the back pain? And that's part of the McKinsey process is that and we take that scoliosis and we sort of go, okay, well, we've got that, but let's move it aside here and let's move your back anyway and see if you respond to any movements and help decrease your back pain. If nothing applies, if we can't find a movement or load or stress that helps reduce the pain, then maybe it is a scoliosis that's causing it. And maybe we need to strengthen the structures around the spine to help hold you as upright as possible. If it's severe enough, do you need a brace or do you need surgery? That kind of thing. I did have a patient. She was older when I got her, like early 20s, but she had had a surgery to fix a scoliosis when she was about 15 or 16, the rods put in, and then developed back pain later. And so nobody wanted to move her because they were like, well, it's the rods. You've got, that, and that's why you're having back pain. But in fact, she actually worked in an office and sat at a computer all day, and her back hurt because she sat. And I started moving her, and her back pain got better. So she was, like, very surprised that what we did helped, and it was really just a simple couple of stretches that she just needed to do throughout the day. So her condition didn't actually have anything to do with her back pain, but she still had it. And so that's, I do see that a lot. And so when we do our assessment, I can figure out very quickly within a visit or two if the scoliosis has anything to do with back pain or if they just need to strengthen their back. That is one of the things we see, yes.
I'm sure you work with, like, a lot of athletes. What is, like, the most common injury you would have from an athlete?
Oh, geez. I work with a lot of athletes.
Does it depend on what?
It depends on what they do.
Football or baseball.
Okay, that kind of thing. Well, I see a lot of pitchers. So if we're talking baseball, I do see a lot of pitchers, and there's a certain high school in town that refers a lot of their baseball players to us. And so what we see with the pitchers are shoulder and neck problems. Or volleyball. I see a lot of volleyball players too. But again, we have to assess the neck, then the shoulder as a primary cause of the problem. And what most people don't understand is that even if they take a picture of the shoulder, like an MRI, very, very commonly they're going to show positive for a rotator cuff tear. So what we do, again, is assess whether or not that rotator cuff tear has anything to do with the pain that they have, and most of the time it does not. And I've actually seen a couple of pitchers who were going to undergo surgery for a rotator cuff tear, and the coach said, listen, just go to this place and let them look at you. And I assessed them. Other therapists in my office have assessed patients the same way and figured out that it was a neck problem that was radiating toward the shoulder, and that once we resolved that, then the shoulder pain went away, and it didn't matter that they had a tear. Most people walking around have a half tear anyway in their rotator cuff. So if we took MRIs of most of the people sitting at this table, I bet half of us would have it and half of us wouldn't, and we just don't have any symptoms. So that's how common those findings are on MRI. So we use that when we can't find a move or a load in our office that seems to help alleviate the pain or problem. Now, this family was incredibly grateful that their son didn't have to have surgery.
Sure.
And it was pretty cool. And he was back pitching at full strength within 2 weeks. So just by doing his neck stuff.
Wow, that's cool. Impressive. What are the allied professions that you work with?
We work closely with most of the primary care physicians here in town. We get referrals from neurologists. We get referrals from pediatricians, from chiropractors. Most of them are, you know, are physicians of some kind that we work closely with.
Do you have self-referrals? Can someone just walk in and say, I think I need to be seen?
That depends on their insurance.
Oh.
Our office is actually a preferred provider with Capital Health Plan. So anybody on Capital Health Plan can actually come to our office without having to go through their primary care doctor. We don't always recommend that, but once they come in and we assess their problem, their doctor, you know, gets an evaluation.
And where are you again?
We are located in Regional Center, which is off of Centerville Road, behind the Publix and Lowe's office complex.
Okay. And the name?
On, Capital Circle. Center for Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy.
Okay. Question.
Back to when you're, like, in school, I know that there are certain classes that can, I guess, would be harder. Which one would you say gave you the most difficult time?
There was quite a few of those. So I'm not very good on memorizing. I'm a very process-type thinker. So things that I had to memorize were very difficult for me. I did really well in things like physiology, where I could understand a process of. Mm-hmm. But if I had to just memorize a straight muscle connects to this bone, and there's no reason, you know what I mean? Well, there's a reason for it, obviously. But it's just straight memorization. Those were the classes I found more difficult. That's just me and my type of learning. Other people, you know, were very good with that stuff. So I tended to have more difficulty with those kinds of classes that you just memorize stuff. But if it was a process, it was easier for me to think that way.
Now, you said you were a McKinsey clinician. Mm-hmm. Will you review some of the other areas that physical therapists can focus on, can kind of specialty areas? I mean, like I know some that just deal with burn victims.
Yes.
Yeah, so, and I think that might be helpful just to see what, you know, the field, vast it is.
Yeah, I wasn't always McKinsey trained, so I have worked in acute care in hospitals.
And
there
what does
are,
that involve?
There are, you know, subspecialties just in that. Uh-huh. So, you know, you had the orthopedic floor, you had the cardiac floor. So those would be patients that may or may not have had heart surgery or a heart attack. So there's a very large difference in something you would do with them versus somebody that just had a hip replacement. Then there's the neuro floor. So somebody that may have a brain injury or spinal cord injury or a stroke. There's that. Then there's the pediatric unit. So you might be dealing with newborns with low tone or high tone or some other issue associated with infants. Usually the torticollis isn't diagnosed till a little bit later, but there are the wound care physical therapists, and those are the ones who do burns or some of the other type of wounds. I had seen a very involved wound when I was in school, actually, at one of my clinicals down in Boca Raton. That was a wound caused by a flesh-eating bacteria, and this person had basically their
muscles.
Their muscles were exposed. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything was exposed, and that particular physical therapist had to do a lot of cleaning every day. And
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Whirlpool baths and a lot of packing the wounds and stuff like that. So there's that area of physical therapy. And then once you go outside the hospital type of system, you have the rehab centers, which are subacute units. You have the outpatient clinics like what I have as a job. And then you have school systems. You know, people work inside the school systems and in daycares and things like that. Then there's nursing home. So you work with the geriatric population mostly there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times that would be more of a deconditioning or possible, you know, hip replacements, knee replacements.
So literally, like I was saying, from birth
to, yeah, to, end of
to
life.
The very end mm-hmm. of life. And I guess, you know, what you do would depend on the developmental age and their issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I have patients that come in and just want to be able to walk across their home. I have recovering mm-hmm. cancer victims. Cancer patients who have undergone their chemo, and they're just trying to condition themselves again to be able to get out of bed and walk to the kitchen and get themselves something to eat. And then I have others who run marathons, and they pulled a hamstring, you know, when they were working out one day, and they want to get back to running. So it kind of runs the gamut of what you see. Other patients that, you know, or a spinal cord injury, and I don't see this so much in outpatient clinics as I do in a rehab setting, is, you know, they just want to be able to transfer to a wheelchair. So the, mm-hmm. you know, what their goals are, you know, that's what you have to work toward if you can.
What's one of the more common conditions that you deal with?
Other than the neck and back pain type,
yeah.
Other than that? I also am a local athlete here in town, and so I happen to see a lot of the athletes that are associated with the Gulf Winds track and triathlon groups. So those are really common injuries for me to see, anything that's associated with athletes. And those could be back or neck pain, but they can also be, you know,
knee
problems, post-surgery, or, you know, a hamstring pull or a calf pull that they may have had while running one day, or something that's, you know, off on their swim maybe, and their shoulder hurts, mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Those are some of the common ones that I tend to see as well.
General rule of thumb, how do the athletes or the individual themselves who may have twisted an ankle or put, mm-hmm. what should they do? Heat, cold, what is the deal?
It depends
there?
On the problem.
Okay.
There's really, you know, there's that PRICE rule, PRICE, which, mm-hmm. you know, protect, rest, ice, compression, and elevate. If they have something like that. So your best bet is ice it down and elevate if they have a twisted ankle or a sprained knee or something like that. But then, you know, definitely have it evaluated by a physician, or, you know, if you've had trauma, you know, an x-ray might be warranted, but it may not. You know, if you just twisted while you're out running around and you really didn't have, like, nothing banged on it, more than likely you're not dealing mm-hmm. with a fracture or anything like that. But again, you know, just to be on the safe side, definitely if you've had an injury like that, do not, you know, if the swelling hadn't gone down in a day or so, get it checked out, you know. I mean, that's kind of that would be the smart thing to do. And then, you know, if the doctor looks at it and says, hey, this looks, you know, pretty much like a twisted ankle, you know, you're fine otherwise, let's get you into some physical therapy. And that's usually when I take over. Sometimes people come to me first, and I'll assess it. And, you know, if it doesn't seem to respond to anything I'm doing in a visit or two, I'll, you know, say, listen, we need to get a picture mm-hmm. of this x-ray or something, just to see why it's not responding. And maybe there's something else there.
At what point, and I don't know if this is a good, at what point does one come to the physical therapist?
for
whatever is going on. I mean, whether it's the shoulder or the
well, sometimes
knee,
we get people on first, like we are their first line of defense, okay. kind of a thing, okay. And that's not uncommon to see, especially those that have Capital Health Plan and come to see us first. But like I said, again, if they don't respond to what we do mechanically within a couple of visits, we do send them back to the physician for further workup.
Have you ever had a patient or a time where you thought to yourself, I really, really have to help them? I know that you always want to help a patient, but have you ever had one that you're like, I have to help them?
Oh, yeah. I had one yesterday. and I don't know how much – I mean, I'm not saying the patient's name or anything, but she had a condition that, you know, you have those every now and then that just really, really touch your heart. And, and yeah, I had one yesterday, and I thought – yeah, I got to get this one fixed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Not that I don't think that way with just about – I mean, I think that way with everybody that comes in. But this one, her story was pretty amazing and what she had fought from to get where she was today. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I have a couple of those that just really pull on your heartstrings. And it's why I do what I do. You know, like I said in the beginning, the way my mom – felt after she was helped by her PT, I thought, if I can just make one person feel that way, then that's why I'm on this planet. And, you know, every one of those people that comes in my office and sits in my treatment room, that's how I want to make them feel. But, yeah, there are those, you know.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I am talking with Marcy Gray, physical therapist, and I have three students joining me. Holly Berger, Gabby Simmons, and Leonard Lindsay. We are being schooled about physical therapy. Marcy's doing a great job, and we appreciate having her. She is from the Center for Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy. She's a certified McKinsey clinician. We're going to take a brief break. What's the 411? I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here at the round table, I welcome Gabby Simons, Holly Berger, and Leonard Lindsay, and a special thank you to Marcy Gray, physical therapist. You had a question, Holly, that you wanted to pose, and let's go for it.
Okay. I had a friend who had two surgeries in about a week's time. One of them required that she bend her knee several times a day. The other required that she couldn't move her knee for a month. And it really messed up her knee. And I know she was going to physical therapy. And I was just wondering what kind of different therapies you would give her to help with that.
Okay. So it would depend on when she got to me. If she got – now, post-surgical orders, I cannot stray from. I mean, that's, you know, that's my license. That's my job. So if a patient comes to me post-surgical and says, you know, this is what the doctor gave for me to do, and I look at the paper and it says, please range it, you know, six times a day, I have to educate the patient on how to do that. So then if she came to me after the second surgery, because the first one didn't seem to work, and it said absolutely no range of motion for 1 month. But I could do something like gait training, which is teaching her how to walk. Then I have to follow that to the letter. Had she come to me prior to both surgeries and it just said knee pain, evaluate and treat, which is what most scripts would do from the doctor, I would have loaded the knee in different directions with different loads. So in other words, I would have maybe had her sit down and move the knee into end range extension, which is all the way straight, and done that several times to see what effect that had on her pain. Then I would have had to do some load, heel down on the floor, you know, extending the knee, and then standing on it, extending the knee. And then I would work into some flexion, which is bending it without load, bending it with load, which would be like a squat. And assess the different movements and the different loads on that joint and how that affected her pain, then I would add some resistance. If nothing was getting better, I would have her resist like a leg extension machine, but I would use some of the stretchy bands and see how that would affect her pain. And then I might go into hamstring curls, so you're bending the knee. Again, assessing how the joint moves, not how the muscles are moving around the knee. And if I had not been able to find anything pre-surgery, then I would have definitely sent her back to the doctor and said, listen, I've loaded this joint in every direction. There's nothing that seems to be helping her. So we need to evaluate this further with an x-ray, with a picture of an MRI. But once they have surgery on them, the knee, the doctor's orders are the doctor's orders, and I cannot stray from that. I do get people that have had surgery in the past, and now they're coming 6 months later, say, for physical therapy because their knee still bothers them. If they've been cleared by that orthopedic surgeon, whoever did the surgery, then I pretty much have free rein as long as it says knee pain, evaluate, and treat. 6 months after a surgery, more than likely they're okay. I mean, they've been walking on it. They've been sitting in class. They've been rising. They've probably been going to gym. You know, they've been running around the mall. I mean, you know, they've been a normal kid for the last few months. Probably nothing I do in the clinic is going to hurt that knee. So then I could start basically as if it was the pre-surgery type of therapy. But now the knee's got permanent change to it because it's already had two surgeries. So there's going to be something different that has happened in that joint now. Does it affect, you know, how I would reevaluate it? Probably not. But then, you know, basically we kind of have carte blanche to start new. You know, say it's a year later. Then I really probably don't have anything to worry about because the surgery was over, you know, was a year ago. And, okay, so – I mean, if this knee's not, you know, right, then we need to assess it then. So as far as your friend's concerned, how far out she is from the surgeries kind of determines what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not allowed to do. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to be careful. Like I said, a lot of the times, though, when they're pre-surgery, if they're coming from a primary care physician, even from an orthopedic surgeon, and they have to go through physical therapy, a lot of times it will say just evaluate and treat. Now, there are some specific docs that if they had evaluated her, they would have been like, well, you know, we'd certainly want this or that. Then I kind of have to follow that. I have to follow, you know, what they say. But I'm always allowed to evaluate. So, you know, there are several types of surgeries that you can't move. Like if she had a fractured patella, for instance, and they had to pin it, yeah, that knee has to stay straight. You have to let that bone heal. Now, once they're cleared to start moving, yeah, that knee is going to be darn stiff, you know, because it's been in a brace for a month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks or however long it took for that kneecap to heal. But then you start bending it and... You know, I recently had a lady that had that happen. She had slipped and fell and broke her kneecap. And so her leg was in a brace for months to heal that patella. And then she came to me for physical therapy and could only bend the knee 30 degrees. And by the time, you know, we got done with our therapy, she's at the gym doing squats, you know.
That's fantastic.
Well, she was an athlete prior to. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, I really want to get back in the gym. The doctor's cleared me. I'm like, all right, well, you're probably stronger than I am, so get your butt back in the gym, you know. You know, once she had that range of motion, she was free to go. And that's all she needed from me for physical therapy. So, again, with your friend, it kind of depends on where she is, how far out from the surgery she is, what the precautions are at that point, and if the doctor's released her or not. So I know that's kind of a broad answer, but that's all I got.
Marcy, we hear so much about the effectiveness of spinal manipulation. Will you talk about what is spinal manipulation?
Manipulation is an outside force acting upon your body, your spine. I don't do manipulations. We have in our practice act the ability to mobilize, but we cannot manipulate. So it and there's, you know, the fine line there, too, of how much pressure is a manipulation and how much pressure is a mobilization. So I'm just really careful if I have to mobilize anybody. But what I do know from being a McKenzie-trained clinician is that whatever that patient can do under their own forces is better usually than what I can do for them. Now, I can take them into end range and mobilize just to assess the effect of that range of motion. Again, not manipulating, just mobilization. But they're going to go home without me. I mean, I can't follow all my patients home and a couple of times a day push on their back or their knee or whatever. So my goal is to teach that patient, once I figure out which move is the right move for them, how to do it on their own. And they need to be able to generate their own force because I'm not going to be there. My goal is to have that person be independent. I, you know, not to be mean, but once I figure out what's wrong, I don't want to see anymore. No. I mean, but you understand. I mean, the goal is obviously independence. So they don't have to keep coming back. And so the less manipulating and the less mobilizations that I can do and that patient can move on their own force with their own pressure and get better and eventually get rid of their pain, then that's
really where you
want. Yeah, that's where I want to be.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Other question?
I know you were talking about her friend, but what if a patient came to you and have seen their regular doctor a couple times talking about their knee hurting and they had – no x-rays done, but they couldn't find anything, would you still evaluate them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. A lot of times things don't show up on x-rays, and sometimes things don't even show up on MRIs, or tons of things show up on MRIs. And what you have to do is, you know, as long as I know that there's not a fracture there, which generally would show up on an x-ray, unless it's a very hairline fracture or a stress fracture, sometimes they do not show up. But as long as that patient didn't have trauma, and nothing, and they've had an evaluation by a doctor, and they've had an x-ray, which is negative, and possibly the MRI, there is nothing that's going to come from – there's no harm going to come from me evaluating them. And again, I don't put my force through their knee unless I absolutely have to. So they're moving their own force. You know, they're moving their own knee under their own forces. So if I'm asking them to straighten their knee, they're going to move as far as they can move. A lot of times what happens in these joints, though, and I kind of use the example of a pebble in your shoe type of analogy, there are things that just get stuck in our joints that cause discomfort and pain. And once they are moved, the problem goes away. You know, and a lot of times in the knee that happens, we spend a lot of time just doing exactly what we're doing right now, sitting, especially if you have a job at a computer or you're a student, you're in classes a lot. We spend a lot of time with our joints in one particular position, and they don't get moved a whole lot. And so once stuff settles in the joint, sometimes it hurts and sometimes it doesn't. So if I can find the position or the load that moves that stuff out of the knee or ankle or hip or whatever, more than likely it's not going to come back. So that's the beauty of the assessment process that we do. Sometimes there will be lingering pain, but the range of motion comes back. And the pain's going to go away because whatever was blocking the movement is gone. And so generally the pain will follow that. It will decrease. But a lot of times in the joints, that's what we find is that it just takes a little bit of movement to have that problem go away. And again, we have sort of this green light, green, yellow, red light system in our office, whereas if it hurts during a movement and the after effect, you're not worse, then that's a yellow light. Keep going and see what happens. If it doesn't hurt during the movement and you're not worse afterwards, then that's a green light. Keep going. So if it hurts during that movement and then it hurts after, if you're worse, you stop. You've only done 8 or 10 reps anyway, so more than likely you haven't hurt anything. It's just you know that that movement is not a good movement for that patient. You pick a different path.
Pick something else.
So my mother has arthritis in her knee, so I was wondering what exercises would you recommend that she would do to, like, reduce the pain in her knee?
Again, I would bring her in. I would look at her range of motion and look at her strength in her knee. But I'd try to see if there's one move better than another. Mm-hmm. And if I go through my entire knee and I can't find anything that works better than anything else, then a lot of those patients generally respond to just function, just getting up and moving. So I might do stuff to just move the joint, kicking, knee bends, you know, stepping up on a block, stuff like that, just depending on what she would respond to or what makes her feel better. You know, just because there's a diagnosis of arthritis doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's causing the pain. It's true that it's there. But again, I take that as kind of like the scoliosis thing. Okay, we know you have it. Let's move it aside. Move the joint. See if it has any pebble in your shoe type of characteristic. Mm-hmm. Okay, if I can't find anything that makes you feel any different, then we go to function and we just see how you feel after just moving around. You know, that's a lot of what we do in our clinic. We sort of sift through everything. And that was part of, you know, some of the patients that I've seen in the past, if they have, I have one that had like a juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. But that was not actually causing the pain that they came in for. I started moving them and their pain got better. I didn't change their juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. I just started moving their joint. She had the quote-unquote pebble in your shoe type of thing, mm-hmm. and she felt better. Now, the mother was very grateful because all this girl's life she'd been looked at as a juvenile rheumatoid arthritic patient. But I didn't look at her that way. I just said, okay, you have it. Great.
Okay.
Let's put it aside for a minute. Let me just assess your joints and see if I can change it. If I can't, okay, maybe it is the juvenile arthritis that's causing your problem. But what if it's not? I haven't done anything to harm you. We've just moved you in a couple different directions. And lo and behold, she felt better when she started moving in a certain direction and worse when she moved in another. So I knew she had the typical pebble in your shoe problem. So she only needed to see me for two or three visits, and I think we were done. But again, the mom was really, really grateful that I didn't just look at her as just because she has juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, I have cancer patients that come to see me that, you know, they had chemo and they're, you know, one of their legs is numb, and they think it's from the chemo. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's, you know, just because you sit at a computer, you know what I'm saying? And work just like, you know, just like Jane Smith over here next to you works at her computer and has back pain and radiates down the leg. Maybe that's what your problem is. It has nothing to do with the chemo. So, again, that's kind of how I'm trained is, okay, I know that you have this medical issue, but I'm not going to let it dictate, you know, me at least not assessing you like I would anybody else.
Right. How important is it, just general, for one to establish an exercise routine?
In general, I think everybody on the planet should be on an exercise routine. Again, unless it's
what
not
about
for
adolescent?
You.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, the typical adolescent we have sitting here, how much outside of, you know, walking to class and back and forth, what should they be involved in?
You know, depending on their time frame, you know, right now their job is to go to school. Their job is to get good grades. Their job might be to keep their room clean or the dishes done or whatever it is. But aside from that, I mean, I think that as they should be at least somewhat active, get up, move 30, 45 minutes a day.
Okay,
and
that's what I want to
do. You know, I think that that's a good, you know, there are those that move way more if they're on the soccer team or if they're on the volleyball team or the basketball team or whatever at school. Then they've got two-hour practices after school, and those kids are moving a lot. You know, I know some of the high school swimmers swim, you know, an hour or two before school. I've seen them at the pool there, and they go back to practice at 3 p.m., and they get another couple of hours in the pool. So, there's that extreme. And then there's those that you know, have the job after school you know, they go right from schoolwork to a job for 2 or 3 hours and mm-hmm. then go home and have to kind of help out with the house. And those kids, you know, at least they can move 30 to 45 minutes, even if it's not all continuous. You know, it's 10 minutes here, or it's, mm-hmm. you know, 5 minutes there, or whatever. Just make sure that you've got full range of motion in your joints and that you're not getting stiff, and that some cardiovascular benefit will occur with, you know, something.
Well, we have 1 minute left, but I wanted to ask you, how would you grade swimming? I mean, when you look at exercises, you have tennis, you have running. I mean, how would you grade swimming?
Swimming is right up there at the top. I highly recommend it. It's non-weight bearing. It can be incredibly good for your cardiovascular system. You have resistance in both directions, whether, you know, you move. It's a push-pull type of exercise. It's usually pretty easy on the joints unless you're body position is incorrect, and mm-hmm. then it could – I mean, I see swimmers in my office, too, that have issues just as well because their head's too low or their head's too high. And so, you know, they get issues with their neck and shoulder or, you know, lower back, too. So, you know, again, just with most form is important there, too. But swimming's a very good exercise.
Well, thank you. I mean, we really appreciate the time and the information you have shared with us. To my listening audience, tune in next week. Same time, same place to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available. And if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.